When you saw the title on the board of Rules and Tools, Woulds and Shoulds, Who is Responsible, what did you think about? What were you looking for? Would you like to pull another chair up there? Why don't you take a third chair?
Sure.
Should we share one of these over here? Good game. Here's a chair all for you. Just for you. You want to sit on it? If you don't want that, here's a marvelous big red pillow. You can sit on the floor. You have a choice. Okay. Who is responsible? I'm Kathy Bosch. I work as a family and life educator for a counseling agency in Kitchener, Ontario. And this is the last session that I'm doing after being here 3.5 weeks. And I want to sort of pick a few odds and ends from a variety of things that I've done in the past several weeks. And I came up with this title, which is something that's mentioned in this particular book, because we all have rules and tools. We all operate under some woulds and shoulds. And I wonder if you could take just a moment now and get in touch with some of the shoulds that you may have been taught or that you may still operate under from early messages back when you were growing up. You should always wash your hands before meals. Anyone not hear that when they were growing up?
You should say please and thank you.
You should say please and thank you. And what would happen if you don't?
You
the world might fall in. Any others?
Brush your teeth.
Brush your teeth before you go to bed.
You should change your underwear every day.
Okay. What are some others?
Should
not show your temper. Should clean your plate at every meal.
Some of them don't have the word should in it, but for example, if you're going to do it right.
Yeah, you should do it and do it right.
You should share.
You should share. You should mind your parents. You should respect your elders. We grew up with a lot of shoulds, didn't we? If only we could, it would be nice. And do you recall any times that you didn't carry through on those shoulds that you've learned? Did God zap you?
So you just carry guilt around for the rest of your life.
You carry guilt around for the rest of life, even though God may have said, I forgive you. I allow you to make a mistake or two along the way, but we don't always hear it or accept it or believe that forgiveness, and we still feel guilty. Okay.
You also carry confusion around all your life because sometimes what the parent told you you should do, they didn't do themselves.
Okay, so there's a bit of confusion that we end up. We hear one thing, we see another thing, and we don't really know which one we ought to do. Because there's a double message there. We tell our adolescents that they ought to be responsible with regard to their sexuality, whatever that means. And yet look at what society, what the culture says. I mean, there's a lot of double messages out there. And even within our own homes, it might be given the dirty jokes that are told, telling stories about someone or other, that gives some very different messages to the young adults as they grow up. Well, I'd like to look at a couple of things. And how many of you have ever seen this before? Okay, those of you who haven't, what do you see?
It's a lady with a hat.
Okay, a young or an old lady?
Old lady.
I see the young lady right now.
You see a young lady. Okay, let me change pictures. Do you see an old lady now? Do you see a young lady?
I don't see a lady.
Face, head. Okay. Let me switch it. Look at this one. Do you see a young lady now?
Old.
Still an old one. Sort of looks like an old, which kind of person with the long, narrow chin, and the chin is buried in what?
Fur collar?
Okay. Anyone see a very sharp, fashionable young woman with a feather sticking out of her hair? Yeah, what's our perception? We get, I've seen this many, many times, and I keep having to squint a couple of times to try to find the other. Do you see the face of a young, side profile of a young lady?
Yeah.
No? Here's her hair, here's her eyelash, here's her chin. Okay, we get tuned into a certain thing, and we maintain that as our perception as the whole being, and yet somebody else might read something else into it. I like this other cartoon. Man walking out in the snow with his young son, and he said, man is up to his knees, can you see the head of the little boy? Man says, this is nothing. When I was your age, the snow was so deep, it came up to my chin. Our perception of things. What are our perceptions? How do we see things? Do we always see things the same way? We can look with and see different things at different times. Here's another cartoon. The little girl is saying to her mom, I'm not cold. Why do I have to put on this dumb old sweater? And the mom says, as she's holding her arms, because it's freezing in here, Hillary, and I'm cold. So the little girl is putting on the sweater dutifully and says, are you hungry too? Maybe I should eat something for you. Yeah, what are our expectations? What are our perceptions? And that if I'm cold, everybody else is cold. If it's time for me to eat, then it's time for everybody else to eat, whether they want to or not. Some of our rules and tools are woulds and shoulds. Here's another one, Charlie and Linus. Linus says, I don't like to face problems head on. They're walking down the street. Linus goes on to say, I think the best way to solve problems is to avoid them. And he says, this is a distinct philosophy of mine. And he stands out orating, and Linus says, no problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from. Well, what do these have to tell us about some of our rules and tools, woulds and shoulds? We might look at our expectations of people around us. We might look at our expectations for ourselves. And where did our expectations come from? Can you think of an expectation that you have for yourself or for someone around you? And where did it come from? I expect people to be courteous. Maybe because my mother said, be kind and don't talk back to other people. You have other expectations? I do marriage preparation programs, among other types of programs, and I think the area of expectations is a very important one for couples who are approaching partnership to really explore together. And one of the exercises I have them do is I take all the men over in one side of this big room and hand them a big newsprint and a felt tip marker and say, write down all your expectations, share your expectations for marriage, and fill the sheet up with them. And I have all the women go on another end of the room and give them a sheet of paper and give them the same assignment. What are your expectations for marriage? What do you expect of your partnership, of your life together? And it's interesting to see what a contrast one list will be from the other. And it's not always the same. One time the women will have all the things on, I expect my husband to be caring, to be kind, to be affectionate, to be sharing, to help me with the housework and so forth. The next series I do, the women don't think anything of that at all. They'll put up some different expectations. And the men will say, I expect my wife to be kind and sharing. So it's not a gender bias, but generally there'll be very different lists, and we put them up on the board and have a coffee break at that time and stand around and talk about them, and they'll say, now who put this one up? Who did that one? No one's going to tell because it came as a joint project. But, oh yeah, Yeah, I didn't think of that one. Uh-oh. You know, they don't know whether it's something their partner said or if it's something they're willing to accept as an expectation of them or if it's going to cause them problems. But it's better to begin to talk at an early stage of what are some of your expectations to share them. Otherwise, we get caught in this bind somewhere along the way. If you really love me, you'd know what I want of you. If you really love me, you'd know what would satisfy me. If you really love me, you'd know what I feel, what's my problem. So I don't know, do any of you have a crystal ball that works? I don't, and I haven't found anyone that knows of a good repair place that can repair or that can fix a crystal ball so that you know what the other person is thinking before. There aren't very many people that are like radar on MASH who always knows a little bit ahead of time what Colonel Potter is going to say. And they follow the words of one word behind each other, and radar is one step ahead of the colonel. We need to share some of these things. It would be nice. Those might be some of our, under our rules and tools. It's certainly a good, important tool to share expectations with those in whom you are in an important relationship. It would be nice. We should know that that's important, but we don't always. So maybe that's one of the tools to put into your toolbox of life skills. How do you express your expectations to those with whom you share some time and space? I really would like, or let's talk about, I'd like to have some ideas what's important to you. What are some of your expectations? To be open, risking perhaps, that you might share something of yourself that you hadn't shared before, or that you might find something out about someone else that you hadn't known before. Looking at your perception, how do you see things? Often, when we look at roots of anger, and I did a series on anger a week or so ago that you can listen to a tape on, we can recognize that often our anger comes because we see things in a different way than another person does. Our perception is different. Our expectations might be different. We expect them to know what I want, what I feel, what I expect without ever telling. And if the other person doesn't match my expectations, then I have every right to get angry at them and blow off or sulk. Go crying in a corner saying, nobody loves me because they weren't able to read my mind. There's an interesting set of tapes that's called Understanding Ourselves and Others that's by a man named James Kern, K-E-R-N. And I did a program series on one of the tapes that's called Basic Human Needs. And James Kern talks about our basic need to be accepted. And in that accepted and understood, acceptance is one, affection is one, the whole area of eating is another, but not nutrition, but not in terms of the foodstuffs we put into our body, but in terms of how we get our bodies fed. Our skin is fed by touch and acceptance. A third one is acceptance, and a fourth one is safety. Is our home, is our environment safe for the development of faith and trust? But on the one, one of the areas he talks about, when he was a little kid and they'd be off to Grandpa's and Grandma's house, his mother would always say, now don't you go bugging Grandma for cookies and don't you go bugging Grandpa to get the toys from the basement. Just wait, and when they're ready to bring them out, they'll bring them out. And he said, and when we got to Grandma's house, Grandma always understood and got us out the cookies. Grandpa never did. And so we'd sit there in our chairs just rocking back and forth, waiting for Grandpa to decide it was time to bring the toys out, and he'd be so busy doing other things or whatever that he'd never remember the toys until we'd start to fight with each other, and then maybe mother would say, oh, Dad, I think you ought to get the toys out for the kids. And it might have been much more helpful if somebody would have asked him that at the very beginning. We can't expect others to know what we need unless we share some information with them. So that's one of the tools that you can put into your toolbox. What you want people to know about you, you may have to share rather than expect them to intuit, to perceive it, to understand your expectation. What are some of our rules in our households, in our relationships? Do you have certain rules in your household? Dishes should be done right after the meal is finished. Or you take a shower every morning. Are there certain rules? What about kids? That there's a certain bedtime or that they have certain responsibilities around the house? Well, one of the things we might look at as we think of rules, what rules do we live under? And what are our current rules? Have they changed? Have we really rewritten the rules for ourselves since we were 6 or 8 years old? Do we still live under some of our parents' rules? You thought about that? And think in your own home, if you've got children who are now preteens or teenagers, do they still have to follow the same rules that were set when they were maybe 5 or 6? How current are you? We might think, what are the basic rules, and to share them. One couple that I know who do marriage enrichment programs, he's a pastor, she's a nurse, say that they have a contract with each other, that at times when they have greatly differing opinions or strong feelings on an issue, that they remind each other of an agreement that they made and signed, that they will not intentionally hurt, put down, or injure through words or any other actions each other as they try to come to an agreement on this difference of opinion, that they will seek to work together to resolve it without calling each other names or stomping off without letting the other know, hey, I need some time to cool off, but let's work on this again in another half an hour or setting another time. We might think, oh, well, that's, you know, we do that anyway most of the time. But the time that it may be really important to remember on those big issues may be the time that it's helpful to have at least a paper to say, remember, remember what we signed here? I don't feel very much like following it, but I will, because I did sign it. Now, how can we deal with it in this manner that we can resolve the problem and still feel good about each other and not say you're just like your mother or you're just like your father or heap a lot of past things on each other that are hurtful and not helpful? So we might decide to set up some basic rules for how do we disagree? How do we bring up those tough issues that need to be resolved and not like Charlie Brown, who says no problem is so big or so complicated that it can't be run away from? Running away from a problem doesn't ever really solve it. It only grows bigger and it adds, you know, what's the final straw that breaks a camel's back, or you get this gunny sack and it just gets so full that it finally explodes. I tell my classes that one of the things that has helped our household to have fewer major disagreements is that I gave up ironing. And when I would say this to students when I was teaching, they'd say, you can't give up ironing. I'd say, oh, yes, you can. Oh, you can't. Well, yeah, you can give up. I still do a quick piece at a time. I just don't sit down and do a half an hour, an hour at a time. Well, and now you don't have that type of clothes. It takes that long. But in our early years of marriage, when you didn't have wash and wear, and my husband was at a lot of evening meetings, And I'd have the girls in bed, and I'd sit down and decide, okay, it was time. And they were wearing dresses or ironable blouses to school. I'd sit down and take out this big basket full of ironing that had been collected. And I'd sit down in front of the television set with some terrible program on that I really didn't want to watch and iron away. And while I would be ironing, I'd think of all the things that should have been done that didn't get done, and all the things that did get done that shouldn't have been done, and everything else that got caught in the middle. And I would stuff things into my gunny sack, and I'd stuff, and I'd stuff, and I'd stuff. And quite likely, by the time I'd finish ironing, everything would be put away, the clothes would be put away, and my husband would finally come home, and the bag would burst. And I'd start talking about this and about that, and there would be 20 issues on the table. And it took, after a while, he would say, after this happened a couple of times, he would end up saying, "You've been ironing tonight." And I'd say, "That doesn't have anything to do with it. Let's stick to the subject." And he'd say, "No, I'm just trying to understand what's happening." And I'd try to sidestep it and avoid it. And it would take a couple more times before I finally realized he was right. Every time I'd have one of these explosions, I had been ironing. And that these were gunny sacking times for me. And so when the next time it happened and he brought it up, and I finally recognized he was right, and I'd say, "Yeah, okay, I'm not going to iron anymore." Things have been much happier ever since. We may not have such pressed clothes, and we switched into a lot of clothes that didn't need pressing quite so much, but we can deal with issues at smaller levels, at littler pieces, before they become mashed in with everything else. And you can't deal with 10, 15 issues at a time. You can deal with one effectively. So that's one of the rules that we try to live by, is to deal with issues as they come up. And a good tool for that particular rule is to tune into your feelings about it. How many were here yesterday where we talked about the awareness wheel? Okay, let me just do a quick review of that. That's very helpful to become more aware of what's going on inside of you. The book Straight Talk will give you some information on that. You have a hub of a wheel. You can make it flowery whatever way you want to. Divide it into about 5 parts. And each part has an important awareness. One deals with senses. What you see, it's like being a reporter that's writing an article for the newspaper. What are you seeing? What have you heard? It's not attempting to answer the whys, to get at who is at fault. It's just answering the basic who, what, where, when, and how. How did it happen? So you can get in touch and say, "I see you really feeling, looking with a great cheerful smile on your face, and looks like you're ready to fly away, you're so excited. I see that." They would have a hard time saying, "Oh, nothing, Josh. When you describe that. Your interpretation. How do you interpret what you see? "I see this person bouncing along so gaily and just just singing, whistling, and just big smile on her face. I interpret something great has happened." And I might say, "When I see you skipping down the street and just bouncing along with such free and ease, I think," and we'll put the word "think" under that, "I think you've had an outstanding day and something special, something unexpected as positively has happened, and they and I feel happy for you." So the next one might be getting in touch with my feelings on it. How do I feel about what I think of what I sense? I might say, "When you give me a great big hug like that, that sensing, the touch that I feel, I think we have a good relationship going, and I feel pleased and contented and happy about it." Or, "When I try to give you a hug and I feel you stiffen up, I think something's going on that I don't know about, and I really feel hurt and lonely and left out. And our intentions might come next, and that's our wants, and I really want to know what's happening. I want to be able to understand what's made the change. And we might then get ready to look at action or plan for action to act on it. And so I would like to talk about this. I would like 5 minutes of your time or 10 minutes of your time to see if we can clear this up. I called a friend of mine. We live in Kitchener, Waterloo, Ontario, which is an hour west of Toronto, and we used to live in Syracuse. Have a very, very dear friend of 25 years length of friendship that lives in Syracuse. And they had been up to our place for New Year's, and this was the end of January. And I called her because I had just gotten a letter in the mail that day that said my major professor for my graduate work at Syracuse was retiring, and he was giving a special lecture, which was the next day. Mail service between the U.S. and Canada is terrible. It's 10 days of time it took. And it was the next day, and I knew that nothing could arrive in the mail, so I called this friend who would have known this professor and would likely go to this presentation. And I called her to say, are you going to go to hear Saul Gordon speak tomorrow at this lecture? And she said, no, hadn't planned on. I said, did you know about it? Yeah, I guess I heard something about it. I said, wait a minute. I'm hearing a voice that I have never heard from you in 25 years. That most often when I call, when we lived in Syracuse, she lived about 30 minutes away from my house. She used to live in the same neighborhood and then moved out to the suburban area. And so often, instead of driving out and back, which would take an hour, I'd spend an hour on the telephone. I'd say, that's my driving time. And my husband would say, how could you think of enough things to talk about for an hour? No problem. We do it about once a week. And I'd say, and with all the long conversations that we've had, I haven't felt this kind of coldness. I'm hearing a voice that is not normally one I receive from you. And I think something's going on that I don't know about. And I really feel bewildered, puzzled. And I really want to make sure that something hasn't happened that's a mistake, or that there's not some confusion. Can you tell me what's going on? And she said, well, you know. And I said, I really don't. Would you care to share something? And she said, well, my husband's leaving at the end of the week. I about fell over too, because they had been with us a month before that. Well, if you know the movie The Four Seasons, it's like The Four Seasons. Anyway, he had told my husband he was leaving his wife. But I didn't know it. She didn't know it when they were with us at New Year's. I should tell the ending of the story. They separated for about 10 months, and they're back together now for 2 years. And it's each time we see them, they say, this is a happy household, and we're working to make it stay that way. So that's a nice ending to that story. But I got the message through the sense, what I heard through the telephone. You might get in touch with what you're hearing and get in touch with what you're feeling about a particular issue. What is your interpretation of it? Yes.
I have an 11-year-old, and it seems that makes it a little more difficult because sometimes they don't know how to put into words themselves what's going on. You know, it just makes it a little harder.
Yeah, and then...
You don't know.
Yeah, and especially if we ask them why. Yeah. Why are you feeling that way? If I say, why are you having a problem? You'd probably say, I don't know. Right?
That's true.
Why is a very difficult question to ever get an answer to. It built a wall. So what we want to do is to try to deal with words, questions that might begin with what. What were you thinking about? How do you feel about it? what ideas might there be for how we could work on this together? What was your understanding of what I wanted you to do? How do you feel about it now, rather than the why? So we want to really put an Amadeet sign through that and just not deal with the word why. But what we can do, especially, is that that's the time that we want to give them some tools. And it may, one of the tools might be to get help them get in touch with the awareness. It's sometimes very difficult to talk about this. What if we take a piece of paper and you go sit at the table or sit out on the front steps or, you know, find a comfortable place where you can do some thinking. And what do you sense? And that's get in touch with see, hear, touch, taste, smell. And you may not use those last three as much as the see and hear. And then what do you think about that? You can start anywhere on this wheel, and you can get in touch with the feeling first. I'm really feeling frustrated, helpless. Why am I feeling frustrated and helpless? Because I heard you say, and I think what you really meant is. And I don't intend to act out that way, or I don't intend to let that happen. I don't want that to happen. I want to do something. So, these are some skills that would be very, very helpful to teach kids, and you can do it at preschool age. You know, talk about what did you see or hear? What are some of the things you hear? What'd you think about them? How'd you feel? What do you want to do as you relate to all of this? How might you act on that? Because once you get in touch with feelings, what most often happens is that we can get bogged down in feelings and we can get locked in one of those segments. Mm-hmm. And get tied up with the feelings without realizing that we have choices as to how we can deal with those feelings. How we put those feelings into behavior is our choice. But we get so programmed from things that we've heard when we were growing up, when our parents, my parents certainly said this, you make me. You cause this. You shouldn't have done. And that we could get quite burdened by the responsibility that other people put on us for them. That I have control of your feelings. Wow, just think what I could do to you. I mean, if that were really true, it isn't. But sometimes it's difficult to take responsibility for our own feelings. It's just much easier to say, you make me feel so furious, or angry, or mad, or whatever, fill in the blank. And no one can make you really feel whatever without your permission. You have to buy into some of it. Now, there'll be some exceptions to that. You hear that somebody has died, somebody has left, something's lost, someone's hurt, and you have some feelings about it. Now, you can choose to let those feelings rule your life for the next 5 years or 10 years. Or you can decide, yeah, you may deal with it for a while, it may take a while, but you really are in charge for how you move away from those feelings or how you act on those feelings. My friend could have said, you knew all about this, and you didn't say anything to me. You're no friend of mine, slam. I may not have ever found out. Because the conversations that my friend's husband had with my husband were confidential between the two of them, and I wouldn't have heard about them from my husband. So we have to work through and get in touch. That's one of the tools that we can gift ourselves with, getting in touch with our own awareness. And it's a tool that we can gift our children with in helping them build their own awareness and become more in touch with what they're feeling. I think kids are basically quite inarticulate about their feelings because even though with this newer age of liberation. Men are supposed to feel more comfortable with their feelings. I'm not sure that that's reached the child stage. We sort of, you shouldn't feel this way. How many of you have never been told by someone, you shouldn't feel a certain way? Is there anyone who has never had that said to them? I certainly have had many times. No hands. We're all in the same boat. Somebody's telling us that the feelings that we have aren't real for us. And what do you want to say to them? They are. What else do you want to say?
Don't tell me how to feel.
Don't tell me how to feel. What else do you want to say? I just want to give you some choices. So what else do you want to...
You end up feeling bad about having the feeling.
Then you begin to feel guilty that I shouldn't feel this way. I don't know whether this is appropriate for the tape, but in a workshop that I attended with Albert Ellis, who's the father of rational emotive therapy and part of my counseling training, he was fairly fond of saying the shoulds that we tell ourselves make us act shitty. And we'd say, but what can we say instead? And he would say, it would be nice if. It would be helpful if. What are the possibilities? So instead of boxing us in to this little box of shoulds, he gives us a platter that says, look at the possibilities. It would be nice if, but there's always possibilities. And when we feel that we have a choice, we're more likely to choose what somebody expects from us rather than being having it rammed down our throat. Anyone agree with that or recognize that from their own experience of growing up or even in its adulthood? Yes?
When I like, are you willing, would you be willing to?
Would you be willing to? Another choice. Put that in your toolkit. Would you be willing to? Let's look at some possibilities. I would like it if. That's my preference, my choice. If you're really serious about it, determined about it, you might say, I expect children who are playing a game to be fair to each other. Or to be good sports if they happen to lose and not throw the board all around and toss the dice pieces all around the room just because they lost. You can share your expectations, share your values.
My little grandson, in playing with, usually it's just like with another child, and he will get pouty or upset with that person, and then he'll start being, you know, making remarks to that really hurts the other person's feelings. Mm-hmm. And so I said to him one day, I said, have you really stopped to think how much you could help that person if you were nice to them and how good you would make them feel, and just trying to feed some positive reactions to him, you know, so that he wouldn't make the child mad and want to go home, or tell me, why don't you make this person go home? And so just, you know, try to say, why don't you, or just don't you realize how good you could make that person feel if you do things a little differently.
Yeah, that you have some other options so that you might be a help or an assistance, a guide, a support to that other person. And in the process, learn a little bit more about yourself and getting along with other people. Getting in touch. I hear you calling me a name. I think maybe you're feeling a little bit left out. I would probably feel that way myself. I feel strong enough that I don't have to accept that label from you, so I don't intend to believe it, and I can act in a way that's still kind and caring to you. That takes an awfully strong kid to do that.
Well,
wouldn't it be marvelous?
To stop and think about, yeah. You know, at least to stop and think about why they're feeling the way they are, that makes them talk the way they did
mm-hmm. to the person. Or, mm-hmm. I think that perhaps there are 10 basic shoulds that we can keep in our vocabulary, and those may be the ones of the 10 commandments. But a lot of others that we've had as our commandments might be better rewritten. Let's look at some other choices, some possibilities. Let's look at a way of problem solving, getting in touch, and then seeing how we can resolve the problem. Looking at defining what our needs are, brainstorming possibilities, looking at the consequences of these possibilities, choosing what's most acceptable to all of us, deciding how we're going to put it into action, who's going to do what, when, where, and how, and then following up at some later time and evaluating how is it working. So that's the problem-solving model.
What was the book you referred to that has more about the awareness wheel?
Straight Talk. By Miller and Nunnally, N-A-L-L-Y. Well, we can look at your rules and look at the tools that can help us carry out, live under the rules that we live under. And that might be tuning in to something that gives you more listening skills, communication skills. And that communication is more than just talking. It's also the other part of it. If you're going to talk, somebody's got to listen. So that to put those two skills together, knowing when to listen and when to talk. To own our own feelings. That's an important tool. To recognize if I'm feeling such and such, I'm feeling that, it's not because you've made me. No one's made me. I am feeling that way. And feelings are okay. That's not to say that it's bad to feel that way. Feelings are okay. They become judgeable only when they're put into action, when they become behavior. So feelings as such, if you're crying, if you're sad, if you really feel like your last friend in the world has left, that's not to say you've got those feelings are bad and you should feel happy and cheerful and put on a hold and smile. Sometimes it might be helpful to see some tears in the village, that it's unreal to be smiling. It's nice, but it's unreal to think everybody's smiling all the time and that there may be a lot of hurts underneath those smiles. And that those feelings are okay and that you're okay. And we have some choices as to how we put them into action. And so that's one of the places we need to take responsibility, to own our own feelings. And to own the actions that come out of those feelings, those behaviors. Particularly since we live in a country that is supposedly a democracy, that we spend such an inordinate amount of our national budget on defense to keep it a democracy and then act as if it wasn't. In our homes as well as in our nation. What are the democratic skills that we're promoting in our family? Or is Dad the power? A king? How do we help them to grow up in a democratic society when that's not the experience that they have in the home? How do we put democracy into work in the home? And Sharon, that's not saying the kids are to run the home. That's not a democracy either then. And that's not to say that you have to agree to everything that the kids want to do. That's not a democracy either. But that you can do problem solving to come up with acceptable negotiated decisions, rules within your home. And I'd say that can begin when kids start school. I don't think you let a 2-year-old decide what time they want to go to bed. Not sure you let a 5-year-old decide, but you might have some flexibility. Is it lights out at 8, or is it you're in your bed by 6:45, and you can by 7:45, and you can read or look at your books for a while, and then I'll come in. You can look at 3 books, and then I'll come in and turn the light out. There's some choices. Do you know the difference between can't and won't?
Won't is just
going to
do it, or can't is they might not be able to do it.
Okay, either way, you're not doing it. Can't is saying, I don't have the ability to do it. Is that, that they aren't able to? I don't have, I could not go to one of the computers and to start putting something into the memory because I don't know the program that it's operating under. I don't know anything about them, actually. That's not saying that I might be able to learn at some time if somebody could patiently teach me. When I say I will not learn, however, I have a choice. Can't means there's no way I can do it. Everything's against me. Will, or won't, implies that I've made a choice. I don't want to. I choose not to. So we might check ourselves when we come into saying that. Are we? Is it something that's just a foregone conclusion, I'm not able to do it? Or is it something I'm choosing not to? There's a whole rack of books out in bookstores. Why do I feel guilty when I say no? That's not the exact title, but yeah. How difficult it is to be able to say no when that's the choice that you really want to make. And the last thing I would like to talk about is the whole idea of rescuers. I think there are many times that we want to be rescued, and I think that that's a change that's coming about with the younger generation of females. They want to go back to be rescued. They don't want to be liberated. And for many of us who have worked hard on that, it's scary, it's frightening, it's disappointing that what we've tried to work hard so that they have some more choices, they're saying, I don't want these choices. I want to be taken care of. And when you recognize what the statistics are, how many of these women are going to have to be out on their own earning their own bread because of either death or divorce, or that their partner may not be able to find a job, but they could in certain areas. Sometimes it's easier for women to find a job than it may be for the man. That they need to have some skills to fall back on. They need to be prepared to be co-determiners of their life and not have every decision made for them by someone else. And so when we think of rescuing our children, oh, I know you can tie your shoelace, but I'll do it now because it's so much quicker for me to do it. Or I know you should do the dishes, but you complain and complain, and then you don't do them the right way. I'll do them myself. Or the husband or wife who drops her clothes in the middle of the floor, and the other partner is the one that picks them up all the time because that person can't stand them on the floor. It's just easier to pick them up than to have this hassle. What you might be saying is that, I don't believe you're capable of doing this. I've got to rescue you. I've got to take care of you because you're too weak, too incapable to manage on your own. That's not saying that there's not times that we really show an extra measure of care. Yeah, it's really tired tonight. This is one time I really will. But to do it as a steady diet because I don't think you can handle it. May give other messages to them that you don't want them to have, that they're not lovable and capable. And perhaps one of the greatest gifts that we need to remind ourselves of and to remind our partners of is that as a child of God, we have gotten a marvelous gift in our creation, and that's that we carry a label on us that says, I am lovable and capable. We may not always believe it, accept it, act on it, but it's there. As a child of God, we are lovable and capable. God doesn't make junk. And I like the other, there's another button that my nephew had at one time. Let's see if I can write it down now. And some of you may know this. I think this is also very important. P-E-P-W-M, G-I-N-F, W-M-Y. Please be patient with me. God is not finished with me yet. We're all in process. We're all still learners. So, how do we use the gifts that God has given us? The tools that we can understand the woulds and shoulds, that we can set the rules that are most appropriate for what we need, and that we can take responsibility, and that the answer to the question, who is responsible, is I am. I can take responsibility for me. And the place that God has put me to work in. And I like Lucy's cartoon that I'd like to end with. Lucy's in her little box saying, psychiatric help, 5 cents. The doctor is in. Charlie's sitting on the box outside saying, what can you do when you don't fit in? What can you do when life seems to be passing you by? So Lucy takes them away from this little her little office, and she says, follow me, I want to show you something. So they stand on the hilltop, and Lucy says to Charlie, see the horizon over there? See how big this world is? See how much room there is for everybody? She asks him, have you ever seen any other world? Charlie says, no. Lucy says, as far as you know, this is the only world there is, right? Charlie says, right. Lucy says, there are no other worlds for you to live in, right? Charlie says, right. Lucy says, you were born to live in this world, right? Charlie says, right. So Lucy yells out, well, live in it then! Charlie flips over. And as he's lying on the ground, she bends over him and says, 5 cents, please. Well, live in it then. Nurture it, take care of it, help develop it, restore it, enable it. Questions? Comments?
On negotiating these rules and so forth, sometimes a partner is not willing to even talk about these things, or sometimes the kids are not willing to.
Yeah, and it's most helpful to have two to tango. Sometimes you can do a solo dance and know that you have at least tried. You may not be able to resolve the problem, but you can feel good that you aren't contributing any more to the problem. And it may take a good amount of while. Remember a neighbor of ours back in another community said, our pastor and I are praying so hard for my husband to get him back into church. It may take a while, but we're going to keep on praying. And it took about 5 years, and now he's a very active member. I hope most things don't take that long to resolve. But we can try, and if we can't, we at least know that we have kept up our end of the bargain. Part of it may be modeling, showing that we care, trying to encourage some communication, reading some things, listening to a tape, going to a counselor, going to a support group. It may be trying to help them understand that this is to be a win-win kind of situation, not a win-lose. You don't want to get into problem solving so you can gain your way at the other person's expense, but that we can find a way that will be satisfactory to both of us. And maybe also to help understand each one's expectations.
I think another point is that we don't have the right to change anyone else. We can only change our own selves and our own reactions to other people. And in doing so, I think that's a step in the right direction. And we need to change ways we relate to people we are in conflict with.
I think that's very important, that the only one we can really change is ourselves. And often change will come about in the other person because of the changes we've made in ourselves. And that may be encouraging, that change is okay. And for a lot of people of all ages, whether it's kids on up to senior citizens and all the ages in between, change can be very scary. Even if what we're in right now isn't comfortable, It may be better than the unknown. That's why a lot of women stay in abusing situations, because it's just so much more scary on the outside. How can I manage? And they also think that's all they deserve, and that's the saddest part of it, because they do deserve more.
I think dealing with change is one of the key topics that we have to deal with in everything we teach, and our families and our co-workers and everything. I remember somebody said to me a few months ago, something that really hit home, they said, the only people who like change are wet babies.
The only people who like change are wet babies. That may be very true.
Because change always brings pain, and we want to escape the pain. And
even though what we're in may be pain, the thought of change
may
be even a greater pain.
Yeah. And if you were raised to think that life is going to all of a sudden be okay when you became 21 or got married or whatever the illusion was, and you weren't prepared for the fact that that was just the beginning of a series of whatevers,
mm-hmm.
you're in for real trouble. I know I faced it. I keep facing it over and over.
Yeah. And whenever we sit complacently back and say, now I've made it, that's probably the scariest time, because, you know, I don't know if we've ever made it until we're put into the tomb, the casket. Because life is a process, life continues. Growing is a womb to tomb process.
People who have arrived are frightening.
To themselves as well as to anyone else. You've heard the story about when life really begins. The three clergy who were talking about when does life really begin. And the Roman priest said, life begins at the moment of conception. And the Lutheran pastor said, no, life begins at the moment the baby takes its first breath in this world. And the Jewish rabbi says, you're both wrong. Life begins when the kids are all through college or university, the mortgage is paid, and the dog dies. That's when life begins. Well, for many of us, it's a long way off yet. You think you may be getting there, and then someone decides to go back to graduate school. I have a handout here on the discipline course. I didn't have the handout sheets available the first couple of times I gave the course. And then Paul rescued me when he went to the worship conference at PLU and got some copies made for me. But if anyone is interested in, there's thinking of choices and thinking of tools, there are 34 possibilities for use to keep out of some of the shreds of how we may have been disciplined as we grew up. Any other comments or questions?
I don't know how much time we have to get into this discussion, but this topic of rescuing, you didn't really cover it in detail, but do you just stop rescuing?
That depends upon what it's about. I hear, probably because I'm into doing a lot of parenting courses and I do a lot of work in the area of discipline, I hear parents reminding you, stop that now. I can't let you do that. You can't play with that. And they'll be referring, over a period of 10 minutes time, telling this child 5 to 10 times that they can't do it, but never really stop the child from doing it. That the child never really learns when the parent really means what they've said. So in a sense, we keep rescuing them by saying, I can't expect you. And to offer some choices and to say, you need to do this or that, you choose, and they take responsibility for it. There's always times, that's not saying that 100% of the time we shouldn't rescue, but that we try to keep the rescuing for those important times when it's a special caring thing, or that we know that at that particular time they're not able to do something because they're overly tired. They really have worked very hard, or that something has come up that's beyond the ordinary that they need more time for.
Yeah.